through the red column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Inside. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hitting Season. This is episode number 489. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Well, this baseball team we were hoping would take advantage of the soft underbelly of their schedule. We were hoping that after a 10-4 start to July, this team would start to cook. And in the 3 days since we recorded our podcast on Sunday night, or Monday night, Justin Liz and I, the team has yet to win, and they've been playing some of the worst baseball we've seen them play so far this year. So we're going to talk a little trade deadline stuff, but we're going to talk about what is going on with this baseball team. I'm going to have Martin Frank, writer for the Delaware News Journal, coming up in just a few minutes. He wrote a couple of fun pieces this week that I'm going to talk to him about, ranking the five best trade deadlines in recent Phillies history and the five worst trade deadlines in recent Phillies history. So some interesting choices from him on that, and we'll also get his thoughts on where the Phillies stand at the trade deadline. But as we are getting ready to get this podcast started here, the Phillies have proven to us once again that you cannot trust them. This is the most infuriating baseball team. If this team was just bad in the middle of a rebuild, we'd all be resigned to it. We'd all be satisfied with moral victories. We'd all be happy with the horseshoes and hand grenades of getting close. You know, we'd be looking for signs of progress from young players. And in a way, it's more fun to root for a team like that because the belief is that better days are ahead. You're building towards something. That's kind of how it felt in 2016 and 2017, especially in the second half of 2017 when the prospects started coming up. Since 2018, and especially this year, this team has been incredibly painful to watch because there are stars on this team. They have spent a bunch of money. There are good players doing good things on this team, but they are surrounded by inconsistency. There are stars who play well for a good long time, and then it just disappears on them. You have some star players that just can't seem to get anything going with any kind of consistency, and factor all of that stuff in with all of the COVID vaccine stuff going on with this baseball team. It's cost Aaron Nola a couple of weeks. It's cost Alec Boehm a couple of weeks. It could end up biting the Phillies in the rear end as the calendar flips into August and into September. I mean, you know, there are all kinds of issues facing this baseball team that really just they're not a very likable group right now because they cannot get out of their own way. And you just cannot trust them. You cannot trust that if this Phillies team has two good weeks, that it's sustainable, that it's going to continue. You can't, and that's why anybody who is mad at Justin and Liz and I for not dancing on the ceiling with where this team was at the on Monday after their series against the Marlins when they won 3 out of 4, because we weren't ringing the party favors out. We weren't jumping all over ourselves trying to, you know, pat these guys on the back, because we've seen this before. We've seen this team do this before. Remember last year they won 9 out of 10? They went on that really hot streak where they won 9 games out of 10, and we thought, "Okay, here they're going to turn it around." And they didn't. They went right into the tank right after that. And there's always something. There's always some reason. And of course, there are reasons this week why the Phillies have struggled. And most of it is because of the pitching now. The pitching suddenly has gone in the tank because Zach Eflin has hit the disabled list with knee tendonitis. That's an injury that resulted in him having to have surgery on both knees 5 years ago, if you'll remember. The Phillies believe Eflin is being proactive here, that some rest will allow him to come back fully healthy. You know, we'll see about that. But the Phillies had to pitch a bullpen game on Wednesday because they surprisingly didn't have Zach Eflin. And one of the pitchers that was expected to pick up 3 to 4 innings in that game had to go on the COVID-19 list because he's not vaccinated. So they had to bring Spencer Howard up from AAA to make the start. And thankfully, Spencer Howard gave them three pretty good innings in that game. But then Christopher Sanchez, who you don't want to be relying on in big games against the Yankees in the Bronx, you don't want to be relying on him to have to give you two or three innings. The Phillies were hoping he would. He could only give them one inning. And so now you're piecing together the whole rest of your bullpen game. And they tried, but Hector Neris gave up three runs. The Phillies came back and scored three, but they tried to squeeze another inning out of Ranger Suarez, and he couldn't get them out of the 10th inning with the runner on second rule. Then you have you've got all of these different things, factoring into that bullpen game and that loss, and the game that was here on Thursday night against the Braves was started by Matt Moore. Matt Moore's a guy who had not thrown more than five innings in a single game this season. Now, in the game against Atlanta on Thursday, he actually did throw six innings. So at the very least, he did kind of eat some innings and helped out an exhausted bullpen. But he gave up six runs on six hits in those six innings, including a grand slam to Dansby Swanson that put the Phillies in a 5-0 third inning hole, and that sunk that game. And so now you've got Vince Velasquez getting a start on Saturday. He never pitches deep into games. There's no guarantee he's going to give you more than five. So they really need Zach Wheeler on Friday night against the Braves. They need an eight-inning outing out of him. I hate to put it on Zach Wheeler like that because he has struggled a little bit in his last three starts. But Zach Wheeler has got to be the horse here because the bullpen game hurt them. Matt Moore hurt them. Vince Velasquez is probably going to hurt them. And you know who else is hurting them right now? The guy who was supposed to be their ace coming into the season, Aaron Nola. I mean, what the heck is going on with Aaron Nola? The Phillies, they learned about Zach Eflin's injury before the game on Tuesday night. So you know going into the Tuesday night's game that it's going to be a bullpen game on Wednesday. You know it. So you're looking at your staff ace in Aaron Nola, and you're saying to yourself, man, we need 7 to 8 innings out of this guy. I know it shouldn't be unfair to ask your staff ace to give you 7 or 8 innings, but we all know Nola has been up and down this year. We all know he has not been consistent. His mechanics have been all over the place, and he's been leaving a lot of balls out over the middle of the plate. He's not walking many guys, and he is piling up strikeouts, but he is leaving a ton of balls over the plate. And once again, when the Phillies really needed a big outing from Aaron Nola on Tuesday night, he failed to come through. Now, he's had great outings this year, and that's what's been so maddening about him, is that he'll go out and he'll completely dominate and put up a game score of like 85. And then the very next start, he does what he did against the Yankees on Tuesday night. There's no rhyme or reason. And the numbers are ugly right now. Nola has pitched fewer than 6 innings in 10 of his 19 starts this season. More than half of his starts, he's failed to pitch. He's pitched fewer than 6 innings. In his last 12 starts, Aaron Nola has an ERA of 5.86. That ERA jumps to 6.10 over his last 8 starts. So over the last 2 months, Aaron Nola has a 6.10 ERA. He's allowed 48 hits and 28 earned runs over the last 41 and a third innings pitched. On the season, his ERA now stands at 4.64. Did you know going into the game, going into the game on Wednesday, the Phillies bullpen ERA was 4.64. Aaron Nola had the same ERA as the Phillies bullpen, just to give you some idea of what we're talking about here. And of course, he missed 2 weeks because he was on the COVID-19 contact tracing list. He did not have COVID-19, but because he's not vaccinated and because he had close contact with a teammate, Alec Bohm, who did test positive for the virus, he had to miss some time. Now, the Phillies got super lucky that this all happened right before the All-Star break, so really he missed probably just one start. But he went 2 weeks between pitching. Probably affected him to some degree. Now, I mean, obviously you can't force Nola to get the vaccine, and he said the prospect of potentially missing starts down the stretch hasn't necessarily changed his mind. And it doesn't sound as though he's in unique company in the Phillies clubhouse, so he's under no pressure from his teammates to get the vaccine. I just wonder what happens. Let's just use our wildest imagination and say the Phillies make the World Series, and he's not vaccinated, and he has to miss a World Series. He has to miss the World Series because he contracts COVID-19. I'm just suggesting that he might wish he had, but it's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch this team shoot themselves in the foot like this And especially when it comes to the vaccine, when it's something you can do to help yourself out. So the whole NOLA 2021 season here, to me, has two serious 2009 Cole Hamels vibes, does it not? Doesn't this feel exactly like, because if you look at the underlying numbers of Cole Hamels' 2009 season, the strikeouts and walks and all that kind of stuff, it really mirrored his 2008 and 2007 seasons. But he got hit hard. Aaron Nola is getting hit hard this year because he's leaving a ton of pitches over the plate. It's a very, very much a Cole Hamels 2009 vibe going on with Aaron Nola so far this season. And the Phillies desperately need him to figure it out. Because with Zach Eflin on the injured list for a little while here, we don't know exactly how long he's going to be out there, hoping it's just the 10 days. But it's not like Zach Eflin has been lights out this year either. The Phillies desperately need Aaron Nola to step up. They are not going to the playoffs if Aaron Nola has a 4.64 ERA this year, or a 5.86 ERA like he has over his last 12 starts, or a 6.1 ERA like he has over his last 8 starts. It's not happening. So given all of these pitching issues the Phillies had, given all these pitching problems, the Phillies really needed this offense to carry them over the last few days, and the offense has not done the job. In the 6-5, 10-inning loss to the Yankees on Wednesday, the offense went 1-for-14 with runners in scoring position and lost despite drawing 11 walks on the night. You can't do that. What a horrible game that was. That was one of the most unpleasant baseball games I've ever watched. It went, like 4.5 hours for a 10-inning game? The Phillies walked 11 times, 1-for-14 with runners in scoring position. Ugly. Just ugly. And then they went 2-for-9 in Thursday night's game against Atlanta. So in their last 6 games, the Phillies are 9-for-53. With runners in scoring position. 9 hits in 53 at-bats with runners in scoring position. Folks, that is a 145 batting average with runners in scoring position. So the offense desperately needs to come through, and they are not doing the job. The bullpen, the beleaguered bullpen, you know, they need help. We'll talk in just a minute about, you know, how much help they might get at the trade deadline, but they need help. They're not equipped. And really, no major league bullpen is equipped to have to handle the type of pressure the starting rotation put them under this week. But this is where we are. The starting rotation, which seemed just a few days ago like it was pretty solid, now has in Aaron Nola a guy you can't trust, Zach Eflin a guy who's injured, and in Zach Wheeler a guy who hasn't pitched that well the last 3 outings, but a guy now that you're leaning on to be an 8-inning guy for you every time out. That's a lot of pressure to put on a guy, because with Matt Moore and Vince Velasquez in the final 2 spots in the rotation, those are 5-inning guys. And yes, Matt Moore gave him 6 here on Thursday night. Give Matt Moore credit for giving him 6 innings, but giving up 6 runs in the process does not exactly help your team win. So it would be good if it was 6 good innings as opposed to 6 bad innings. But 6 innings is 6 innings, and you save your bullpen arms a little bit. You hope that on Friday, Zach Wheeler is able to pitch effectively and steal a game from the Braves and get this team's bullpen a little bit of rest, because they're going to be needed with Vince Velasquez on Saturday, and they might be needed with Aaron Nola on Sunday. And that's the thing. You can't trust Aaron Nola to go deep into a game for you anymore. So this is where we are with the Phillies right now. People feeling real good about this team on Monday after a 10-4 July with a soft schedule coming up, with a ton of home games coming up against sub-500 teams. And maybe they turn it around, but we were saying this team really should go 9-3, 8-4 over this stretch. They've already started 0-3. So, you know, this 12-game stretch, if you want them to go 9-3, they got to go on a 9-game winning streak. If they want to go 8-4, they got to go 8-1 over these next 9 games. You see that happening? You see that happening with this group? I do not. And now they are under 500 once again. They are 1 game under 500 after losing to the Braves on Thursday night. So maybe we just accept this team for what it is. And yes, they do still have a chance to win this National League East. They absolutely do. They absolutely do. And maybe by going out and getting some guys at the trade deadline, you help yourself. You make yourself better. And maybe you're not a 500 team at that point. And we'll see what Dave Dombrowski does. But these last 3 games, you know, it seemed like the Phillies were making a push to prove to Dave Dombrowski that he should go out and he should spend some capital and he should buy and he should bring in some top flight players. And now they go out these next 3 games and they show Dave Dombrowski, hold on, put the phone down. Maybe let's wait this out a little bit. Maybe we don't think we can win. Maybe we're not good. A game under 500 is not a playoff team, friends. I don't care how close to the division you are. It's not a playoff team. It's not a playoff team if you're under 500 here in late July. Still time to turn it around, but this team has given no indication over the last 4 years that they're anywhere close to turning it around. So listen, let's talk to Martin Frank about the trade deadline coming up here and about these trade deadlines of years gone by. Some interesting stuff coming up from him, and we'll talk to him coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk a little bit about the Phils as they approach the trade deadline is Martin Frank, writer for the Delaware News Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at MFrankNFL. Martin also covers the Eagles and just is real knowledgeable in pretty much all the four major sports. And so he had a couple really good articles this week, some fun articles about the Phillies trade deadlines and recent trade deadlines. He broke down the five best trade deadlines in recent years and the five worst trade deadlines. So I wanted to talk to him about those two pieces coming up here in the next few minutes. Martin, welcome to Hittin' Season. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself? And thanks for having me, Bob.
Absolutely. No, and I really enjoyed your articles. I want to get to them in just a second. I just, as we're speaking, the Phillies are playing in New York, and it, you know, they went into that series against the Yankees really on a nice little ride, 10-4 in July, and people starting to feel good about the team. And then, you know, as has happened with this team so much over these last few years, just when things are really starting to feel good, the Phillies really hit another brick wall of adversity. You know, they deal with some pitching issues, some COVID-19 issues. Aaron Nola has a bad start in the first game of the series, and, you know, they're trying to piece together bullpen games, and they've got a couple of starts with a couple of pitchers in Matt Moore and Velasquez who can't go deep. Right now, the pitching staff is really kind of in shambles at the moment. What is your assessment of this Phillies team, where it just seemed like 48 hours ago hopes were so much higher?
Yeah, it's kind of strange because, you know, like you mentioned, all these things have gone wrong at the same time. I mean, they have the whole COVID issue, which is still affecting them now. I mean, they were playing the Yankees tonight, and their plan was to, you know, go with a bullpen type of game and stuff, but I think like two of their relievers just got added to the COVID list, so that's two less people that Joe Girardi has to go through, and they called up Spencer Howard from AAA, mm-hmm. you know, to pitch tonight at least. And I think he went like the first three innings tonight, and it's just crazy. It's like one thing after another, but you know, you look in the grand scheme of things, they're, you know, headed to the July 31st deadline. They're, I think the Mets won today, so as of right now, mm-hmm. they're three games behind the Mets. You know, they still have a chance in the NL East, and, you know, that's kind of what they're hoping for. I mean, you know, if they can kind of just hang in for, like, a few more days and maybe address some of the needs they have. I mean, obviously, with what's going on now, you can see they need, like, a lot of people in a lot of different places, so they'd pretty much be open to getting just about anybody at this point.
Yeah, Jason Stark of the Athletic has an article out. We're talking about it. It seems as though for the first time the Phillies are willing to go above the luxury tax. They're not coming right out and saying that, but it doesn't seem as though
right.
teams that have talked to the Phillies believe that that they seem to be the players they're asking about would certainly take them over the luxury tax, only about $4 million under. So how aggressive do you think they should be, given the fact that this team has been a bit up and down? If they do, you know, they're basically a 500 team right now. They're benefiting from playing in a pretty weak division at the moment. But if you were Dave Dombrowski, right. how aggressive would you be right now?
I wouldn't be overly aggressive. And the reason I say that is because, you know, like you mentioned, they're about like $4 million away from the luxury tax threshold. I mean, if they're going to get somebody, let's say, I know, like, Chris Bryant's name obviously has been bandied about, you know, mm-hmm. by a lot of teams. I mean, you know, he's a free agent after this season. So basically you're looking at a, you know, a two and a half month rental. And I don't think that's worth, like, pretty much giving up maybe a top prospect, because the Cubs are going to be asking for a lot for a guy like Chris Bryant and, you know, some of the other guys, high-profile guys who are on the market. And the Phillies don't really have a deep farm system to give away like one of their top prospects. And another thing is that, you know, it's just not worth it. Like you said, they're basically still a 500 team, even though they have a chance. So I would think it would be more of a second tier type of guy. I don't think it's going to be like a a big name guy like Chris Bryant or someone like that. I think it's going to be more a second tier type of guy, maybe like a late inning reliever, number four or five starter, you know, maybe somebody who can give you help in the outfield, especially in center field, you know, with Odubel Herrera on the IL, and, you know, they're going with the guy Jankowski tonight, who, you know, is basically a minor leaguer who's up just because they have nobody else to put in there, you know. So I would lean towards more towards that. I mean, that still might get them a little bit over the luxury tax, but, you know, I think for a few million dollars, they'd be willing to pay that.
What about a closer type guy? I mean, it seems as though the Phillies don't really have one. I mean, you, Ranger Suarez has pitched pretty well, but he's a guy who really, he has to be perfect with his location in order to succeed. Hector Neris has proven he's not the guy. Jose Alvarado's not the guy. Archie Bradley doesn't seem to be the guy. You know, and there's a few guys out there like Craig Kimbrell, the Cubs, Raisel Iglesias of the Angels, Richard Rodriguez of the Pirates are all out there. Seems as though those are guys that could be moved at some point here at the trade deadline. If the Phillies have to give up kind of a mid-tier prospect to go out and get somebody like that, that the kind of move you see the Phillies making? Do you see them being in the ninth inning closer hunt?
I see them being in the seventh and eighth inning closer hunt. I mean, I'm not saying that Ranger Suarez is the answer going forward, but I think like what Joe Girardi wants to do or thinks he can do is if they do get a reliever, it would be a late inning guy, someone he could mix and match. I mean, it doesn't mean that he won't, you know, this person won't be the closer. I mean, I think, you know, you can see, you'll see Suarez, you'll see Alvarado, you know, if they acquire, you know, Archie Bradley can maybe pitch the ninth inning every once in a while. I think it's more of acquiring depth than it is, let's say, a bona fide closer like Kimbrel. I don't think they have enough to get somebody like Kimbrel. I just think the Cubs would be asking too much for a guy like that, and I don't think the Phillies have that to offer. But I think if you're looking for like a late inning, seventh, eighth inning guy who can maybe, you know, pitch the ninth, you know, here and there, that would be great. I mean, you look at a team, you know, I kind of think like the Tampa Bay model would probably be ideal for the Phillies in that situation. I mean, you know, they mix and match their closers based on, you know, the other team, who they have coming up in the eighth and ninth inning, and they go about it that way. And I think that's probably the ideal way for the Phillies to get through this because, you know, like you mentioned, I mean, Suarez has to be pretty much perfect with his control, which, you know, more often than not, he has been so far. Alvarado, you know, he throws 100 miles an hour, but, you know, you have no idea where the ball's going sometimes. And, you know, Neris pretty much imploded, you know, time after time, you know, over like in June and everything. So I think it's just like a situation where, you know, they want to get somebody for late inning depth and mix and match, you know, who ends up closing the games.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the articles that you wrote because they were a lot of fun. The Phillies have been active at the trade deadlines over the last couple of decades, and so they've had some very interesting ones. I want to start off with the five best trade deadlines because it's always more pleasant to talk about the good ones. You have the number one trade deadline for the Phillies over these last few years was from June of '89, and I remember this one quite well. This was the trade deadline that really helped to set their 1993 pennant run up, where they got Lenny Dykstra and Roger McDowell for Juan Samuel. Lee Thomas went and got John Kruk for Chris James, and then he got Terry Mulholland and Charlie Hayes for Dennis Cook and Steve Bedrosian. You have that one ranked higher than trading for Cliff Lee, who was amazing in July of in 2009, and ahead of going out and getting Joe Blanton in 2008, which directly led to a World Series. Explain why you have that June of '89 trade deadline ahead of Joe Blanton and Cliff Lee.
All right. Yeah, thanks. First of all, I would say that, you know, that one was like three trades basically within like a 2-week period, I think, in July. And basically it's the long-term staying power. I mean, when they got Cliff Lee, he pretty much just finished out that 2009 season. If you remember in the offseason, they traded him to Seattle on the same day they traded for Roy Halladay.
Right.
And you also look at the guys that the Phillies gave up. I mean, Carlos Carrasco is still pitching today. I mean, you know, at the time, he was one of the Phillies' top prospects, but he hadn't really made it to the major leagues yet, and Cleveland was rebuilding, and, you know, the Indians pretty much put him right in the rotation, and, you know, there were some rough spots here and there, but from like 2014 to 2018. He was one of the top pitchers in the American League. And, you know, he's still pitching today. I mean, Cliff Lee retired in 2014, I believe. So, you know, that's why I didn't have that above the Dykstra, Kruk, and you know, that trade. And then also is Joe Blanton. I mean, he was a decent player. He wasn't like a great player, but I mean, obviously when they got him, you know, he didn't lose again the rest of that season. I mean, yeah. I think when they made the deal, he was like 5-12 with an ERA just under 5. And everyone's like, really, this is what you're doing? But you know, he turned it around in Philly and they ended up winning the World Series that year. And, you know, like you said, Cliff Lee got him back to the World Series in 2009, but you know, you look at the guys who formed the 1993 or the nucleus of that 1993 World Series team, and three of those guys were the guys that got at the trade deadline in 1989. So that's kind of why I have that as the top one.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, by the way. I just think most fans would probably think, oh, Cliff Lee's got to be number one, but you're 100% right. I mean, that was a series of deadline deals that Lee Thomas made that all worked out magically for them. I do think it's interesting that the one that you have ranked number four, you have Hunter Pence. The getting Hunter Pence in July of 2011 is the number five best, the fifth best trade deadline deal. But it's interesting that the one you have for number four in July of 2006, they didn't acquire anybody. It was when they traded away Bobby Abreu and David Bell that season. And normally when we think of successful trade deadlines, you're thinking of players that the team acquired to help you go on a pennant run. And in this case, this was a trade deadline where the Phillies were selling and didn't get any and did not get any players back in return for the players that they were selling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically the thing about the Bobby Abreu trade with the Yankees was it was a salary dump.
Yeah.
Abreu was making like $13 million that year. And the Yankees agreed to pay the rest of the salary that he was owed for that season. And obviously in that case, they gave him like, you know, lesser prospects. You know what I mean? Like none of the four guys that they gave the Phillies ended up making it to the major leagues. So, you know, the Yankees did them a favor getting Bobby Abreu off their hands. You know, Abreu was still a good player and he obviously helped the Yankees and everything, but the point of that trade for the Phillies, A, was to clear salary, and B, it gave Shane Victorino a chance to play every day. And Victorino at the time was a young player. He never really had an opportunity before. And, you know, I actually went back and did this. If you compare the stats from Bobby Abreu from 2007 to 2011 to Shane Victorino from that same period, their stats are pretty much the same. I mean, Abreu might have a few more home runs. I think it was like 79 to 71, but Victorino stole a whole many more bases, like 150 to 122, and then their OPS was pretty much the same, like right around 800. So, you know, at the same time, you're paying Victorino like a major league minimum salary, and you're not paying Abreu $13.5 million a year. So I mean that's what made that part a great trade. And David Bell was kind of a disappointment that year for the Phillies. And by trading him and stuff, I mean it's not like he opened up a spot for anybody because I think they finished out the year with Abraham Nunez, who you know was pretty much a backup guy. But you know, like by getting rid of those guys, the Phillies turned over that team to Ryan Howard, Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins. I mean, you know, they were all pretty much young guys, but they were, you know, it obviously became their team and the team just took off and they were playing so well in August. They went out and traded for Jamie Moyer.
Right.
And, you know, who ended up being a key part for their playoff teams and World Series teams, you know, up until like 2010. So, yeah, that was one of those trades where addition by subtraction, definitely.
Yeah. And I always push back against people who, and I've seen this on online, people calling, you know, Abreu was a clubhouse cancer and you can't win with Bobby Abreu. And I think two things can be true at the same time. One, Bobby Abreu was a really good player and he helped the Yankees and Angels get to the postseason. So he was not an impediment to reaching the postseason. He was an excellent, excellent player and probably an overall better player than Shane Victorino. But while at the same time, Shane Victorino's personality and playing style and what he did well fit that team better. And sometimes it's just the way it is. Sometimes there's a certain fit that just works out better. It doesn't mean Bobby Abreu is a cancer or that he was a terrible baseball player. It just might mean for that particular group of people and that particular time, it was better to move on from Bobby Abreu and hand the job to Shane Victorino. And I think those two things can both be true at the same time, can they not?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. And then also, if you look at it again, the rest of that year, that 2006 season, Victorino played right field because they had Aaron Rowand in center field. Well, the next year, you know, they moved Victorino to center and they let Jason Wirth play every day. And, you know, he ended up, you know, obviously being a key part to their four, you know, to the next 4 years of making the playoffs and World Series and all that. So, I mean, it was kind of a win-win all the way around. And Abreu is probably one of the best Phillies ever. I mean, you know, the guy had a couple 30-30 seasons. And like you mentioned, you know, overall was, you know, a great player for many years. And it just, you know, it was time. I mean, Abreu at that time was like 32, 33 years old. And, you know, Victorino and Worth were much younger. And, you know, it kind of changed the face of the franchise a little bit. You know, you built more around the young nucleus. And yeah, it was just, you know, it turned out to be a great trade in the sense that the Phillies played a lot better. They turned it. There was no question who the leaders of the team were anymore. It was, you know, a youth-oriented team, and they ended up supplementing that, and then they went on their playoff run. And that's kind of, that was kind of like the impetus, that trade right there.
Let's talk about your five worst trade deadlines. And I think the ones that you ranked number one through four were all deals where they traded players away. But the fifth worst deal that you have was the last year when they went out and tried to rebuild the bullpen, when they went out and they got David Phelps and David Hale and Brandon Workman and Heath Hembree. And I know even mentioning the names has Phillies fans breaking into hives. So I do apologize to listeners of Hitting Season right now for the subconscious scratching that you're doing on your arm right now. But no, I mean, it's really hard to believe that some of these guys like Workman and Phelps at the time were actually, they had pretty good track records, but it just didn't matter who they brought over last year. You put them into that Phillies bullpen and they were going to light themselves on fire.
Yeah, it was crazy because, like, you know, like you mentioned, these guys had decent track records and stuff, and it was just like, it just seemed like whoever they would have gone out and, you know, gone out and traded for probably would have imploded. I mean, you know, that the whole bullpen was, I think, the second worst in Major League history. Like, the ERA was 7.06, and it was bad even before they got all those guys.
Yep.
Obviously, it wasn't, those guys didn't make it any better. I mean, maybe it was just one of those toxic situations where no matter who you put in there, I mean, it was just like, you know, they had kind of a defeatist attitude, and I think, you know, maybe they were on pins and needles, like, you know, anything could happen. You know, anything could happen. Like, no matter what they do, something's going to go wrong. And I think, like, that kind of mentality pervaded throughout the bullpen, and it just made it seem like whoever they would have gone out and gotten, you know, would have probably had the same results. And it was just a bad situation, and those guys didn't make it any better.
Yeah. I do want to talk about the one from July of 2015. The Cole Hamels trade. And, you know, we also forget that they traded away Jake Diekman, who is still a pretty good relief pitcher in Major League Baseball. And as you look back at that trade at the time, I felt, you know, yeah, they got a pretty good haul for Cole Hamels in that deal. And we just saw Jorge Alfaro in Philadelphia with the Marlins. He has not improved one little bit from his time when he first came up in the major leagues. Nick Williams has come and gone. Jared Eichhoff has come and gone. He's scuffling with the, Jared Eichhoff with the Orioles now? I'm trying to remember who.
I think the Mets.
The Mets, actually. Yes. He's with the Mets. You're right. And so that deal just absolutely stunk. I mean, they didn't get anything out of it. And I remember at the time, the guy that I really wanted them to get was Nomar Mazara instead of Nick Williams. Yeah. And he was just released by the Tigers. So it really didn't matter who they traded with the Rangers for. Whatever they got back from Texas was not going to work out, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was crazy. And at the time, you know, Texas was considered like a you know, they were one of the better teams in baseball, but like they were loaded in their minor leagues.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Mazara. He was like one of their top prospects. Nick Williams, I think, was mentioned up there. And yeah, for whatever reason, it just never panned out. And, you know, when you're trading somebody like Cole Hamels, he was 31 years old, I think, that year. He was still at the top of his game, obviously, because,
pitched a no hitter his last game. His last game with the Phillies. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then, you know, Texas went on to the playoffs that year and the next year with Hamels. So, you needed to get something really good out of the deal. And the only saving grace in that was that the Phillies ended up packaging Alfaro with a bunch of other players to, you know, the Marlins to get JT Realmuto. So, I mean, you know, otherwise that might have been like, you know, one of the two worst trades, you know, at the deadline in their history. I mean, but they had, you know, they did manage to turn Alfaro into Realmuto, so they save face there. But yeah, it was crazy. Alfaro was considered one of their top prospects too. I mean, he was supposed to be like a really good catcher, and like you mentioned, he's never gotten better. You know, still the same injury issues, still strikes out a ton of times with the Marlins. You know, so it was, yeah, it was just one of those crazy things where, you know, they missed on that one. You know, you're supposed to get a big haul for a guy like Cole Hamels, and they didn't, you know, and that was, you know, that set them back too. I mean, you know, all these things, you look at why the Phillies haven't made the playoffs since 2011. I mean, it's because of, you know, it's because of bad deadline deals like that. It's also because of bad drafting. I mean, you look at like the recent draft history and, you know, there isn't much to show for that either. You know, all those things add up.
Yeah, poor matters. Player development, all that stuff matters, absolutely. Last thing for you, you have the Curt Schilling trade as the third worst trade at the deadline. You have the trades of Victorino and Hunter Pence in 2012 as the second worst. And then you have the Scott Rolen trade in July of 2002 as the worst trade deadline deal. Can you explain to me, why do you have them ranked in that order? Because I probably would have had the Schilling deal ahead of Victorino and Hunter Pence, but I think I can see how you got there.
Yeah. The Schilling deal, actually, you know, when you look at the four players they got back in return, they all contributed to some extent. You know, Omar Dahl was, obviously, you know, he was awful that year. He lost 19 games, I think.
Yeah.
He was going to be, like, the first one to lose 20 since Brian Kingman with the A's, like, in the early 1980s. But somehow the Phillies managed to either skip a start or something, so he didn't lose that 20th game. But he came back the next year and pitched really well. You know, and same thing, Travis Lee was once a high, like, a number two overall pick of the Tampa Bay Rays back in the mid-90s, but never really, you know, fulfilled his potential. But the next, you know, after the year after the Phillies acquired him, 20 home runs, 90 RBIs, Vicente Petillo was a pretty good pitcher for the Phillies for, you know, the 6 years he was there. So, I mean, they got guys back who contributed. I mean, obviously they're not at the level of Schilling, but, I mean, they weren't awful.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just, you know, and the Victorino and Hunter Pence trades, I mean, I think the Phillies kind of waved the white flag on that season a little bit too early. I mean, I know they had their issues, injury issues and everything like that. They weren't performing as well as they should have been at that time. But, you know, those guys were still good players and they still needed them. And, you know, I just thought it was too soon to raise the white flag on that season and probably the next season too. I think that kind of cost them, you know, going forward after that as well. And then, you know, the Rolen trade, I mean, they got pretty much nothing in return. I mean, Placido Polanco was a decent player and stuff like that, but, you know, he was, at that time, he was pretty much blocking Chase Utley from playing every day, him and David Bell. So, you know, it wasn't a situation where they helped themselves out in the long term and everything. I think they just, you know, when you're training a guy, a franchise icon like, you know, Schilling and Rolen, you want to get good guys back, not only for the present, but the future. And the Rolen trades especially, they didn't do either. So
yeah,
that's why I had that one as the worst, you know, worst of their trade deadline deals.
Yeah. And I 100% agree. The Scott Rolen trade, absolutely the worst trade deadline deal the Phillies have made. Well, listen, we're going to see what they do here at the trade deadline. And hopefully whatever Dave Dombrowski does here at the 2021 trade deadline, we'll be able to slide into the five best trade deadlines piece that you're going to write probably in 5 years from now, as opposed to a five worst trade deadlines deal. But really good stuff there from Martin Frank. Folks, make sure you're reading everything he does in the Delaware News Journal and follow him on Twitter at MFrankNFL. Hey, Martin, thanks for coming on Hitting Season, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, well, let's go through the trade rumor mill here before we finish up the podcast. And Matt Gelb and Jason Stark for The Athletic did some really good reporting on where the Phillies are right now as far as the trade deadline is concerned. And it seems as though the Phillies could be willing to go over the luxury tax. And that's really the big news. They're about $4 million under the $210 million luxury tax. And so the perception, according to Jason Stark, from other baseball teams around Major League Baseball is that the Phillies could be ready to go over the $210 million mark in payroll based on what he says are two telling factors. A, the caliber and salaries of the players the Phillies have asked about as the trade deadline approaches. So it sounds from Jason Stark like the Phillies are asking for big players, big money guys. And B, the obvious trust that ownership has in new president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski. Now, this piece was written when the Phillies were just 2.5 games behind the New York Mets. Okay, so after the Phillies lost to the Braves 7-2 on Thursday night, the Phillies stood 3.5 games behind the Mets in the National League East. So, again, they're certainly within shouting distance of the Mets. The Mets had the night off on Thursday. Certainly within shouting distance of the Mets, 3.5 games back, you can still buy. But again, you are a game under 500 as you're getting closer to the trade deadline. Is John Middleton going to go over the luxury tax for a team that's under 500? It doesn't feel like he would want to do that. Now, according to Stark, he says there are indications the Phillies have asked about every closer who could be available, which includes Kimbrel and Iglesias and Richard Rodriguez. We've talked about all those different guys, as well as a bunch of setup guys. He also says, in addition, the Phillies have checked in on Chris Bryant and Starling Marte and a number of available outfielders. But clubs they've spoken with say they're not interested in trading McAbel or anyone they consider to be a building block in the construction of future contending teams. So he says, Dave Dombrowski, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the podcast on Monday night. He told the Takeoff podcast with John Clark that he thought they had plenty of good prospects. He says that they could make deals with prospects if they needed to. So making deals with prospects without moving McAbel would be interesting to see. It doesn't necessarily mean Bryson Stott wouldn't be on the move. But according to Stark, rival front offices agree with the Phillies' assessment that they have prospects that teams would want. So I guess it's possible that they could move some prospects and land a guy like Kimbrel and go over the luxury tax here. And let's just take a look at what Dave Dombrowski has done at the trade deadline over the last few years. In the Stark article, they look back to 2012. And generally speaking, he's done really good at the trade deadline. In 2012 with Detroit, he got Anibal Sanchez and Omar Infante. Both were very good pickups. In 2013, he got Jose Iglesias and Jose Veras. In 2014, he picked up David Price and Joachim Soria. In 2016 with Boston, he went and got Drew Pomeranz, Brad Ziegler, and Aaron Hill. In 2017, Eduardo Nunez and Addison Reed. 2018, Steve Pearce, Nathan Eovaldi, and Ian Kinsler. And then in 2019, he got Andrew Cashner. So, you know, this is a guy who makes trade deadline deals. None of those guys were huge superstars, so it may not be a Chris Bryant coming your way, but it sounds like the Phillies, at least a couple of days ago, were engaging with teams for some high salary guys that would almost certainly push them past the luxury tax. So if you are, and listen, when you hear me yelling about the Phillies here being a game under 500, I'm not saying the Phillies shouldn't be buyers at the trade deadline. They certainly should not be sellers at the trade deadline. Just play it out with what you have. You're not going to get much for the guys you have on one-year deals anyway. You're not going to get much for McCutcheon. You're not going to get much for Hector Neris. You're not going to get much for Archie Bradley or Jose Alvarado. Just keep them and see if you can hunt down the Mets, and maybe you can get hot a little bit. But my reticence, because I want the Phillies to buy, I just don't see a good team here right now. But maybe you go out and get Craig Kimbrel, you give the team a jolt. I mean, certainly if you get Craig Kimbrel and you get Chris Bryant, maybe now you're talking about something significant. Would they do that? Would the Phillies do that? They might need to do that in order to get over the hump. They might need that push. They might need that kick in the rear end from outside the organization to get them moving, because this team is stuck in mud. They are stuck in mud. They are spinning their tires. They might need a kick in the pants from the outside in order to get them closer to contention, because it's not happening with the group that's here. These last 3 days, have shown that it's not happening with the guys who are here already. Some trade rumors from outside the Phillies sphere. Actually, we have our first major trade of the deadline. This came down on Thursday. The Tampa Bay Rays picked up 41-year-old super-aged slugger Nelson Cruz from the Twins to be their DH. Nelson Cruz, man, just keeps doing it. A 294, 370, 537 slash line. He's got an OPS plus of 151 heading into Thursday. 19 homers and 50 RBIs. He now has 436 career home runs, which is 46th on the all-time list. Nelson Cruz, just a modern miracle. You don't see guys hitting this well into their 40s anymore, but Nelson Cruz doing it now for the Tampa Bay Rays. Great pickup for them. MLB's Mark Feinson says that Colorado shortstop Trevor Story is actually drawing interest as a center fielder. You wonder if the Phillies have been in on this a little bit. Feinson noted that Story has never played in the outfield, much less in center field, in the minors or majors in his career. However, he says Story has a sprint speed that ranks in the 88th percentile in baseball. So I guess front offices are speculating. He's a fast guy. He has the athleticism to cover a lot of ground, but that's a big chance to take. You know, he's never, ever played the outfield before in the minors or majors. All of a sudden, you're going to make him a center fielder? I don't know if I'm good with that. Jeff Passan reported that Chris Bryant is as good as gone from the Chicago Cubs. So it certainly sounds as though, from other things I've read, that don't expect much more action this week. But as you get closer to July 30th, that it could be a whirlwind, because there does seem to be a clear amount of like 10 buying teams and 10 selling teams. And there's like 10 teams in the middle that could do either. But there are some really good pieces on some teams that you know are going to sell, like the Cubs with Kimbrel and Chris Bryant, maybe Wilson Contreras, maybe Anthony Rizzo, maybe Javier Baez, lots of different guys. There are struggling teams with good players, and they're going to move them. So this should be a really interesting trade deadline. It just may not really kick in until next week. Mets general manager says the Mets are focusing on starting pitching, which is good because the Phillies are not really in that area. So the Mets can go looking in a different shopping bin than where the Phillies are. Passan says look for the Padres to make a splash here at the trade deadline, and that they could go over the luxury tax to do so. A lot of Joey Gallo to the Padres heat, although seeing today on Thursday, a lot of Gallo to the New York Yankees heat there. That would be something else. John Heyman reported earlier in the week that the Phillies would be, quote, near the front of the line if twin center fielder Byron Buxton were to become available. I'm not sure how the Phillies would be able to afford him in terms of prospects. I know the Phillies, they say that they have prospects that teams like, but Byron Buxton is a superstar. I don't know that the Phillies could get him without giving up Mick Abel, but, you know, who knows? And then Heyman also writes that the Phillies have been one of three teams in touch with the Marlins about Starling Marte, along with the Astros and Yankees. So there's going to be a lot of smoke here this week. But again, just a friendly reminder not to really believe anything solid until Jim Salisbury tweets it. Okay, the National guys, they're going to report stuff, but until Jim Salisbury gets it, you have to take everything with a grain of salt. Once Jim tweets something, you know it's pretty good, and you can kind of hang your hat on it. So some other Phillies news before we finish up. Scott Kingery underwent shoulder surgery to repair a torn labrum. He'll miss the rest of the season. The team hopes he'll be ready by spring training next year. What a sad career this guy has had so far. Four seasons. He has a slash line of 229, 280, 387 in 1,127 plate appearances. He was not playing well in AAA this year. He is still owed $6.25 million next year and $8.25 million in 2023. The Phillies also signed all of their top 10 draft picks from last week's draft, with first rounder Andrew Painter signing for a $3.9 million bonus. That was just under the $4.2 million slot value. Second rounder Ethan Wilson signed for $1.5 million, which was right at slot. So the Phillies went and signed all of their first 10 draft picks already. Good to get those guys in the fold and get them into the farm system as quickly as possible. All right, time for your stat of the week, courtesy of Scott Lauber. Hoskins is the first Philadelphia Philly and only the eighth player ever in Major League Baseball to reach 300 runs, 300 walks, and 300 RBIs in their first 500 games. Here are the others: Aaron Judge, Frank Thomas, Eddie Matthews, Ralph Kiner, Charlie Keller, Ted Williams, and Babe Ruth. I mean, what a list. And Rhys Hoskins is vaccinated. Of course, Rhys Hoskins also had the right about the good stuff line. So 2021 has been a bit of a journey for Rhys Hoskins, hasn't it? But an impressive list of players to be associated with in the 300 run, 300 walk, 300 RBI in their first 500 games club. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, but anytime you can lump a Phillies player's name into a group like that, it's worth mentioning here on our Stat of the Week. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Martin Frank for joining me on the podcast this week. Folks, if you haven't done so, make sure to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season and see a lot of the bonus stuff we have going on over there. And also, tell your friends about the podcast. We're going to have Eric Longenhagen from Fangraphs to break down even more about all of the Phillies draft picks from a couple of weeks ago. He's going to give us the skinny on everybody the Phillies picked, and so be looking forward to that one. And we'll talk a little prospect chatter with him as well. Nobody better than Eric to do that with, so we'll be talking to him on the midweek episode of Hittin' Season next week. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.